So as I mentioned yesterday, I wanted to discuss the issue of using grape juice and Yayin Mevushal for Kiddush as to whether that was appropriate or allowed based on our Mishnah. Our Mishnah has a large impact on that because of a Gemara in Baba Batra on Daf Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph, whereby the Gemara says that anything that is ra'oi for the Mizbeach is ra'oi for Kiddush Hayom, and vice versa. Anything that can't go on the Mizbeach can't be used for Kiddush Hayom. The Gemara there says, what does that come to exclude? And then it has a havamina that it should exclude Yayin Mikito or grape juice. The Gemara says that can't be the case because Rabbi Chia tells us that grape juice, even though l'chatchila you shouldn't put it on the Mizbeach, b'diavad, if you put it on the Mizbeach, it is kasher. And if b'diavad, it's kasher for the Mizbeach, that's good enough for Kiddush l'chatchila. And then we bring a memra there in Baba Batra that Rova says, Sochei dedam eshkol shel anavim v'omer alav Kiddush Hayom. Person can squeeze grapes, take that grape juice and make Kiddush on it right away. So it should be an open and shut case that grape juice is absolutely fine for using as wine for Kiddush, because it's explicit in the Gemara in Baba Batra. With regards to Yayin Mevushal, it seems to be an open and shut case the other way around. Our Mishnah says that Yayin Mevushal is not only pasol lechatchila, it's pasol even b'diavad. And it's in the grouping of items that included matok, where Rashi at one point said that maybe that's tirosh, that is grape juice, and that's why the Bayit Tosafot rejected it. Because the Gemara Baba Batra says that grape juice b'diavad is kasher. Over here, the Mishnah says that b'diavad it's pasol matok, and therefore matok can't be grape juice. But in that grouping is also Mivushal. And then it should be an open and shut case. If Mivushal is pasul for the Mizbeach, even b'diavad, it should be no good for Kiddush. So then if I had to come to a conclusion now as to whether you can use grape juice, the answer would be yes. If it came to Mivushal, the answer would be no. Now, you have one problem with grape juice, which is that there is a requirement of Hasech Nesech Shechar LaHashem, which is that you have to bring a Nesech that's Shechar. That is midi de mishaker, something that is intoxicating. Grape juice is not intoxicating, yet the Gemara seems to indicate over here that using of grape juice isn't a problem. Now, what most of the Mefarshim explain is that grape juice, if you did not drink it as grape juice at that time, would continue to then ferment and turn into wine. Since it has the potential to become a midi de mishaker, it's classified as being bidiavad, a midi de mishaker, and therefore you can use it for kiddush. So that would imply that l'chatchila, we would want you to use wine or midei de mishaker. B'diavad, you can use grape juice, even though it's not a midei de mishaker, since it would become a midei de mishaker, you can use it as well. Although, the way that the Gemara is formulated in Baba Batra, it would seem that l'chatchila, you could use grape juice, even though it's not a midei de mishaker. On the other hand, when it comes to yayin mevushal, it would seem to be an open and shut case that you can't use it. And that is the view of the Geonim. That is the view of anyone who writes about this issue in the time of the Gonim, all the way through the time of Rashi. We have a shut from Rashi. We also have a shut from the Rif that all say that with regards to Yayin Mevushal, number one, the brocha on Yayin Mevushal is shakol. It's nishtaneh bibriato. It's changed from its original state. And similar to what we see in the Gemara and Brachot with regards to vegetables, that if you cook vegetables that are normally eaten raw, that changes their status. They become shakol and no longer bori pri adama. Some of that has changed today with regards to raw and cooked vegetables because we eat our vegetables differently than they did in their day. And what is considered to be normal and not normal has changed. But nevertheless, you see when something has changed mi briato from its original state to the process of cooking, it loses its bracha bori pri agaf and becomes a bracha of shakol. And that's what all the gonim Shud Rashi, Shud Arif, all of them say, Yayin Mevushal, the bracha is shakol, and it cannot be used for Kiddush because it's no longer designated or considered to be wine. So again, here you would have an open and shut case. And the Ritz Geiut and the Rambam seem to echo these same sentiments and say that Yayin Mevushal is clearly disqualified. And then they add on other items that also could be disqualified if you have wine that has honey that's added to it or has seor that was added to it. That should also be a disqualifying factor. The Rambam does bring that there are some who are matir these items because the idea of yayin ara'oi l'nasech al mizbeach is only coming to exclude things that are really, really disgusting or inappropriate, like yayin shereichu ra, yayin which has a bad odor to it, or meguleh, something that was left exposed overnight and could have snake venom in it, or mivushal. Those are the things that are excluded. But otherwise, if you add items like davash and seor, even though they're pasul mizbeach, they're not necessarily disqualifying in terms of the wine itself. And the Ravid over here subscribes and says that that's right. the Yesh Matirim is the right way to go, and that's the halacha, even though the Rambam leans heavily towards the other side. And the explanation of the position of the Ravid and this other position within the Rambam, the Tashbetz explains the difference in the qualifications for Mizbeach and Yain for Kiddush, makes it that there's actually a difference in the halachic outcome with regards to that, and that is, even though they're paralleled in the Gemara and Baba Batra, nevertheless, for a Kiddush, you need something that is designated or delineated as wine. So as long as it's called wine, even if it has these additional items or features in it, that doesn't disqualify it from being wine that is good enough for Kiddush. On the other hand, if you have these items in it where the Mizbeach has a demand for, first of all, unadulterated wine, and you can't bring certain items on the Mizbeach, this might be disqualified from being put on the Mizbeach, not because it's not called wine. It's because the Mizbeach has these other requirements that you can't have Davash, you can't have Soy, you can't have these other items on it. So the disqualification over there would not disqualify those wines for Kiddush. The qualification for Kiddush is different than the qualification for the Mizbeach. And that's where the Ravid favors that other half of the Rambam. But that is generally the view, seems to be lopsided and one-sided, which is that grape juice would be fine to make for Kiddush, whereas Yain Mevushal would be absolutely unacceptable for Kiddush. Not only would it not be good for Kiddush, you wouldn't even make a bracha of Bori Pia Goffin on it, you'd only make a bracha of Shakol. This all changes with the Rishonei Ashkenaz, starting with the Rav Yoh, and then following through with the Sefer HaManhig, the Sefer HaRokeach, the Or Zarua, who has one nuance different between all of these, the Sefer HaMachria, and the Chidushei Ramban, Shibolei Aleket, Maram Mirutenberg, the Chidushei Rashba, the Rosh. Every one of them have the same opinion, which is that Yayim Mevushal is kosher for Kiddush wine. So the question is, what changed between the period of the Gonim all the way through the time of the Ritz Keyud and Rashi, who all say that it's problematic and they can't use it? Whereas all of these Rishonei Ashkenaz say you can use it. All the Rishonei Ashkenaz quote Yerushalmi, that is not quoted by the Gonim and by others, and they rely heavily on these Rishalmis. There are three Yerushalmis, one found in Shkalim, one found in Psachim, and one found in Shumot, that seem to indicate otherwise. The Mishnah in Shumot is a machloket as to whether when you have Yain Mevushal, is that considered to be an upgrade or a downgrade? Over there it seems to be Rabbi Yehuda believes it's an upgrade, the Chachamim believe that it's a downgrade. Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara says Mukhlefet HaShita, that their Shitot are flipped, and because of that it's really the Rabbanon who say that Mevushal is Aliyeh Aluyeh, is actually an upgrade. So that's the first thing that they rely on. The other thing they rely on is both a Gemara in Psachim and a Gemara in Shkalim in the Yushami, that say that you're allowed to use for the four kosot on the night of Pesach, Yain Mevushal. It's asked explicitly, and the Gemara is matirit. One of the four cups that you do on the night of Pesach is Kiddush. And from that, they all conclude that Mevushal is allowed to be used for Kiddush. And with the exception of the Or Zarua, they all believe you make a Bori Priya Goffin on Yain Mevushal. The Or Zarua has an interesting shita where he says that you can use it for the Arba Kosot, but the bracha on it is Shakol, which means that he's probably viewing it somewhat akin to Chemar Medina, which is the primary drink of that country, which is allowed to be used in certain instances for Kiddush Havdalah, maybe the Arba Kosot. And one of their proofs is the fact that the Gemara in Baba Batra, when it's searching for what was excluded, how come it didn't mention Mevushal? Mevushal is something that you would have thought had been okay, but which should be disqualified because it's disqualified from the Mizbeach. The fact that the Gemara doesn't bring Mevushal shows you that they don't think Mevushal is disqualified from Kiddush. The Gemara does what we hear in Baba Batra. Geonim and others dismiss that thinking because they say that it's not true. Because the bracha on Mevushal is Shakol. So it wasn't even in the realm of possibility. The Gemara was even entertaining that possibility because if the bracha is Shakol, it wasn't really the Kiddush, and it's not because it's disqualified from the Mizbeach that it's disqualified from Kiddush. It's disqualified from Kiddush because you make a Shakol and it's not wine any longer. Obviously, the Rishonei Ashkenaz believe differently based on the Mishnah and Gemara in Shumot. In the Yerushalmi, that indicate that it is Aluya Aliyeh, that it's an upgrade, and they're based on that upgrade, they think that it's called wine. You make a Bori Priya Goffin on it, and if you make a wine and it's Bori Priya Goffin, it's not excluded by the Gemara and Baba Batra, that indicates that it is good enough to be used for Kiddush Hayom, as well as what we saw in the Yesh Matirim in the Rambam, that is upheld by the Ravid, that the exclusion in the Gemara and Baba Batra is only for items that were seriously impaired or disgusting that we wouldn't put on the Mizbeach, but it wouldn't come to exclude Dvash Seor, even though the Rambam says it would have excluded Mevushal. These Rishonei Ashkenaz believe that it would not exclude Mevushal. The Shura Tashbeis tries to reconcile between the Shita of the Gonim and the Shita of Rishonei Ashkenaz to say that which is Basol when you have Yain Mevushal is when it's mevushal harbeh, when it's cooked for a very, very long time, to the point that it no longer resembles wine. But if you cook it for a small amount of time, that's what the Rishayon Ashkenaz were speaking about, and that difference leads to the difference in psak. And so it's not driven by a different view about Yain Mevushal, but rather a difference in what Yain Mevushal was for the Gonim versus what it was for the Rishonei Ashkenaz. And the Shudat Tashbez also makes it clear that he thinks there's a distinction between Kiddush and Abdullah, whereby even those poskim that might say that Yain Mevushal is problematic for Kiddush, they'd be much more apt to allow it for Havdalah, because by Havdalah we have other kulot, including Chemar Medina, which you're allowed to use. If you can use beer for Havdalah, then you certainly can use Yain Mevushal for Havdalah. And therefore he says the real question is only with regards to Kiddush, and not with regards to Havdalah. So that leaves us again in a position where the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, based on that, he has the Rambam who says no, the Rosh that says yes with regards to using Yain Mevushal. And he Paskins like the Rosh that Yain Mevushal is fine to be used for a Kiddush, and the Ramah seconds that as well. What's interesting, the Rabbi Yosef points out later, is that the Beit Yosef generally has a principle that he passes halacha based on two out of the three great poskim that came before him. That's the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. So he has a situation where it's one versus one. He has the Rambam who says it's no good, and the Rosh who says that it is good. What the Beit Yosef did not have was the Shut HaRif, where the Rif said it was problematic. And Rabbi Yosef just points out that it was a possibility, had the Beit Yosef had the Shut HaRif and known what the Rif's position was, he might have paskened differently and said that Yain Mevushal is problematic, because he would have paskened like the Rif and the Rambam over the Rosh. But he only had the Rambam and the Rosh, and therefore he favors the Rosh over the Rambam in this situation, and he paskens that Yain Mevushal is fine. So now that's all with regards to Mevushal and grape juice. It would seem again that it's an open and shut case, that according to Rishon Ashkenaz, Mevushal is no problem whatsoever. And according to the Gemara itself, grape juice is fine. So then what's our issue with regards to both Yain Mevushal and with regards to grape juice? The difference is that our grape juice is made differently than the grape juice that was made in the time of the Chachamim. Grape juice in the time of the Chachamim, it's true of all juices in the time of Chachamim, were just a preliminary stage on the way to a fermentation to put them into a permanent state. Without refrigeration, there's no point in keeping juices, and there's nothing to do with juices. Juices have no shelf life. The only way to have something that has shelf life is to ferment it. So if you have apple juice, you ferment it into apple cider. You have grape juice, you ferment it into wine. That gives it shelf life and the ability to be stored. If you kept it as grape juice, or if you kept it as apple juice, then you would be in a situation where it would have no shelf life and it would go bad very shortly. So there was no reason to do that. And people, first of all, didn't drink juices. That's why the Gemara in Barachot calls it mohel ba'alma. It's like the sweat of the fruit, and it, you don't even make a bracha boi pri eitzan, you make a shakal. That's why many poskim today at least entertain the possibility that maybe the bracha on fruit juices today should be different, because we make them primarily for that purpose, and we drink them as proper juices. Maybe the bracha should be boi pri eitz, especially when you have pulp in the orange juices. Maybe that should be a boi pri eitz versus a shakal, because the Gemara's view of juices is very different without refrigeration. The way that we make grape juice today, again, is different from that of the Gemara. The Gemara just had grape juice when you first pressed it, and then if you left it, it then went on to ferment and turn into wine, or if it went bad, it turned into vinegar, but it could not remain in that state of being grape juice for very long. And that's why the example of grape juice over there is you squeeze the grapes and you drink the grape juice right away. The way that we make grape juice today is by stopping the fermentation process. The way to stop the fermentation process is to boil the grape juice right away and kill the bacteria inside that would allow for the fermentation. In their day, they could have done the same thing, but there was no purpose in doing that because they couldn't keep it afterwards. Once you had the grape juice, what are you going to do with it? They didn't have refrigeration. Today, where we have refrigeration, once you create the grape juice, then stopping the fermentation process gives you a grape juice, but it's a grape juice that will not continue to ferment, and we can store it by either creating a vacuum pack or putting it into refrigeration once it is open. And therefore now it has value to us as grape juice. Or they all otherwise add sugar to it, which kills the bacteria because there's too much sugar and it can't ferment. So those are the ways that you do make the grape juice. But that makes it that our grape juice is very different than their grape juice. Our grape juice, number one, is not a midei mishaker. It's something that will never reach alcoholic levels. Remember before we said that you need, for something on the mizbeach, but Kodesh Hasek Nesach Shechar LaHashem, that has to be a midei mishaker. And we explained, though, according to the Gemara, where grape juice is okay, is because it could become a midei mishaker, because if you left it, it would ferment. Our grape juice, no matter how long you leave it, is not going to ferment. It'll go bad, it'll spoil, but it will not ferment into midei mishaker, Because our grape juice, they've stopped the fermentation process. That's number one. Number two, our grape juice, as opposed to theirs, was boiled. Their grape juice was just squeezed out of the grapes. Ours is yayin mevushal. So that means that our grape juice has two detriments to it. Number one is that it is mevushal. And number two is that you've stopped the fermentation process from happening in the future. So it's not going to be something that's meeted in mishaker. And for that reason, you would think possibly that our grape juice would be disqualified. So now, as far as mevushal is concerned, we already discussed that there is a large body of Rishonim that believe that mevushal is okay to be used for Kiddush. And Moshe Feinstein in a Tshuva makes that clear, that grape juice is absolutely fine to be used for Kiddush, just like we say that Yain Mevushal and grape juice are fine according to the Gemara, the combination of the two, and our grape juice is totally fine to be used for Kiddush. And even a funny story that Rabbi Dr. Abraham Tversky tells over in their Alcoholics Anonymous program, where when a recovering alcoholic needs to get better, he's not allowed to drink wine, even for religious reasons, he has to avoid wine or alcohol at any cost. So it was a Catholic individual who was involved in the recovery program, but he wanted to do the sacraments in the church, in the Catholic church, but that involved a wafer that was soaked in wine, which wouldn't be allowed according to the Alcoholics Anonymous rules. And they didn't know what to do. They sent it up the ladder of the structure of the Catholic church. They didn't know what to do. So it ended up, they came and asked the rabbis what they did in these situations. The rabbis said, oh, they use grape juice. So the Catholic Church paskin that if it's good enough for the Jews to use grape juice for their Kiddush, it's good enough for our sacraments to use grape juice, and they allowed these recovering alcoholics to use grape juice for their sacraments in the church. But that is, according to many of the poskim, that grape juice is absolutely fine, and the chatkila one can use grape juice for the Kiddush Hayom. There is a group of poskim, especially the Briskers, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal wrote about this extensively, that seem to favor using wine and meat in the mishaker for Kiddush Hayom. That's based on the Rashbam in Psachim, who says that Shira can only be said over Mida de Meshaker because of a Seik Nesek Shar LaHashem, and therefore there's a specific correlation between Shira and the Kiddush Hayom, and that requires Mida de Meshaker, and therefore they favor using wine for Kiddush Hayom over grape juice. And even by the Arba Kosot, where they were willing to use grape juice for the other three Kosot, for the Kos of Kiddush, they were makri to use Yayin. And so therefore, they favor using Mida de Meshaker, wine, specifically when it comes to Kiddush Hayom. That's true in the Shut Mishpatei Uziel. The Shevet Alevi also discusses the fact that the Meiri says that Yayin Mevushal is problematic, even after all the Rishonei Ashkenaz, but he says none of the other poskim picked up on the Meiri and allowed the Meiri to become halacha. And therefore, he says that in the end, halachically, b'diavad at least, one can use grape juice, but there are a large number of poskim that favor heavily using Mida de Meshaker, using wine. But nevertheless, there are strong poskim like Moshe Feinstein and Rav Avadi Yosef who say that even the chatkila one can use grape juice for Kiddush Hayom. I'll send out the mikorot and one can look into more depth into this issue.
All right, we're beginning here on the top of Pei Zayin Amud Aleph by the Gemara. The Gemara now is quoting from the Mishnah, Emevin lo matok, velo mevushal, velo meushan, that a person can't bring sweet items. We discussed yesterday the fact that Rashi brings two interpretations to Matok. One is just simply that it is naturally sweet. The other one was that it was Tirosh, was grape juice, which is rejected by the Balei Tosafot over here based on the Gemara in Baba Batra that Rabbi Chia says that Yayin Migito, grape juice, lo yavi, shouldn't bring it, b'vimi kasher. If you do bring it, it is b'diavad kasher. Over here, the Mishnah says that if you bring it, even b'diavad, it is pasul. So lo mevushal, not cooked wine, velo meushan, and not smoked. V'im hevi, if you do bring it, pasul, it's no good. V'aktani reisha, what about earlier on the Mishnah, it says, em evina listion. Again, we discussed yesterday the listion from the word helios in Greek, which means that was exposed to the sun. Rashi in the Ketav Yad brought the possibility that it was already picked, and then it was exposed to the sun in order to sweeten it. The Balei Tosafot are not so enamored with that explanation and think that it's, well, it's still on the tree. We saw something similar in the Miyuchas, the Rashi, that they were on the tree exposed to the sun and sweetened by the sun on the tree. B'mevi kasher. And then if you do bring it, b'diavad, it is kasher. Amaravina kroch vitani. Why don't those two sections of the Mishnah get combined? So now you could have one of two results by combining those two parts of the Mishnah, because technically they have different dinim. In the first set that we brought, it's imevi pasul. If you bring it b'diavad, it is pasul. And the second group, which was the listion, we said imevi kasher. If you bring it b'diavad, it is kasher. So now Ravina's suggestion is to put them together. the way that Rashi reads it, put them together, v'hatani tarvayu imevi pasul. Both of them should be pasul b'diavad. The Baalei Tosafot read it just the opposite way, which is put them together, v'kiroch v'tani lachshir. That both of them should be v'imevi kasher. The idea being, why is there any distinction between listion and basically matok? Both of them are a problem because they're too sweet. So why doesn't the din for both of them end up being the same when b'diavad, whether it's kasher or pasul? So Rav Ashi amar, chulya deshimsha lo ma'is, chulya depere ma'is. So the sweetness that comes from the sun is not something that is considered to be disgusting, nauseating in any way. Chulya depere, on the other hand, the sweetness of the fruit. And again here, if you think like Rashi, matok is either the grape juice or the naturally sweet grapes, they're just grapes that are way too sweet naturally, then that is something that's nauseating, that is something that is unpleasant, and therefore it's ma'is, and it's inappropriate to be put it on the Mizbeach. So even though both of them are from sweetness, the nature of that sweetness is different. One of them is generated by the sun, and that's something that is acceptable or something that is pleasant in a way, as opposed to the sweetness that comes from the perot themselves. That's something that's not considered to be appropriate to bring on the Mizbeach, and that's why you have a different din, b'diavad, between them. Eim yivin yashan, divei Rabbi. Rabbi says you can't bring aged wine, v'chamim makshirim. Chamim says totally fine. Amar chizki on my time with the Rabbi. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi's position? Amar kra. The
pasuk says, by Rosh Chodesh and Parshat Pinchas, v'niskehem chatzi ayin yi adapar, v'shlishit ayin na'ayil, u'revit ayin na'keves yayin. Zot alot chodesh v'chodesho l'chodeshe ha'shana.
That you bring for the libations,
a revit ayin na'keves yayin, but there's some sort of hekesh here between the keves and the yayin because they are juxtaposed to each other. And therefore,
ma keves ben shnato, just like a sheep, when you bring it in the Mikdash, has to be 1 year old. Af yayin ben shnato. So too, wine should be 1 year old. But Gemara says, well, if you do that, ima keves ben shtei shanim pasul, then if you take that hekesh to its ultimate conclusion, that means that not only do you have to bring it in its first year, but that means that if it's in its second year, it is pasul. Just like a keves is no longer a keves after it's 1 year old. Af yayin ben shtei shanim pasul, so too the wine in its second year should now be pasul. B'chitei ma'achanami. Okay. Why can't we say that for Rabbi's position? Vatanya, because we have a braita, yayin ben shteshanim. If you have 2 year old wine, lo yavi, one should not bring it, ve mevi kasher. And then, if you do bring it, it is kasher, bidiavad. Man shmait le damar lo yavi. Who's the only individual who says that there's any problem with aged wine? As far as we know in the Mishnah, the Chachamim think that wine is lechatchila, you can bring it yashan. So the only person who has any reservations about yayin yashan is Rabbi. So the author of this braita must be Rabbi, because it says you shouldn't bring it. Vikamar. And despite that fact, it says he may be kasher. If you bring it bidiavad, it is kasher. But based on the hekesh that you made, it should be pasul. El amarova hainu time ed Rabbi. Must be a different reason behind Rabbi's position. Dichtiv. Pasuk says in Mishlei, in warning an individual to the dangers of wine, Al teire yayin ki yit adam. Don't look at the wine while it is red.
Ki yiten vakos eino yitalech b'meisharim. When it sparkles inside of the cup, or when it goes down smoothly, don't become intoxicated by the red wine. It is extremely intoxicating in both meanings of the word. It is more powerful because of the redness, but it also has this aesthetic pull, and the appeal of the red draws the person into that feeling of wanting to become intoxicated by the wine.
And so therefore there's this huge appeal to very red wine. And as Rashi explains in the Ktav Yad, Bekimlan, Kishavrashnato Overit Ad Mimut, that after the first year passes, the redness of the wine diminishes. So the peak redness that you have in the wine is during that first year. And that's why Rabbi says after that first year, Yayin Yashan, we prefer you don't bring such wine because it's lost some of its redness. It's lost some of that appeal that makes it into something unique and special that you'd want to put on the Mizbeach given the redness of the wine. Ein mevim lo min adaliot. And we said in the Mishnah that you can't bring from those that are on the trellises, but rather those that grow on the ground. Tana, kramim ha'avudim pamayim bishana. Over there it said it had to be a vineyard that is worked. So now here the Gemara gives you, what does it mean a vineyard that's worked? It means that twice a year they used to hoe the earth around the vines, the grapevines, in order to make them grow better, to oxidate the ground, and to make it more porous. So if you do that twice a year, that's something that is beneficial to the grapes. Of Yosef Habalei Karno de Pardesa, he had a corner of a vineyard, de Rafik Bat Fe Rivka. He did extra hoeing over there, I mean he did it twice during the year. Vavad Chamra de Darimaya Chadrein. And it produced grapes that had to be diluted at 2 times the normal dilution rate. The normal dilution rate is 3 to 1, 3 parts water to 1 part wine. His grapes were so strong because he had hoed there twice that he had to do it 6 to 1 in order to dilute the wine. So this is reinforcing this idea that if the vineyard is worked or hoed over, plowed over twice a year, those vines or those grapes are much more potent. Lo yakun sinoto b'chatzavim gedolim. They didn't bring them in these big vats. Tana chaviot ktanot. Those small barrels that they used were kadiot, lodiot, ubenuniot. They are kadim, which are more along the lines of pitchers, although the Gemara in Baba Kama tells us in the third parak that chavit and kad are basically synonymous terms. The truth is that the difference might be based on their mouth. How wide is the mouth and how fine is the intricacies of that which is made? But generally they're used for the storage and they're both of a similar nature. But over here we're talking about the kadiot of Ludiot. That means from the city of Lod. They obviously were famous for their making of these kadim, these pitchers, ubenuniot, and the middle size from Lud. The barrels that they were using, they had to be of a smaller size. And over here, the Gemara gives you that size, which are kadiot, ludiot, benoniot. They are the pitchers from Lud that are the middle size. Eminichim otam shtaim shtaim elachat achat. You don't put them 2 by 2, but rather 1 by 1. You can see over here that the girsa of the Rambam was that you don't stack them up achat achat, velo shtaim shtaim elashalosh shalosh. Don't put them 1-1, 2-2, but rather 3-3. We'll just address the girsa that we have, whereby Miuchas the Rashi and the Rashi and Tav Yad have a slightly different variation in it, which is don't place them 2 by 2. So Miuchas the Rashi says zo agav zo. Don't stack them on top of each other. Ela achat achat. You have to place them next to each other rather than on top of each other. The other hand, Rashi in the Ktav Yad says that they shouldn't be placed zu bezad zu, one next to the other. Shem yitkalkel achat b'tariach michaverta. Because if one of them goes bad or ferments, turns into vinegar, that problem will spread from one to the other. And therefore, we don't want to put them next to each other. Seems to be from Rashi Ktav Yad that you would stack them on top of each other rather than putting them next to each other. As opposed to Miuchas, the Rashi is saying the opposite. That you shouldn't stack them, you should place them next to each other. The idea being, again, to give some sort of airspace for the fermentation of each of those barrels. But more importantly, if something goes wrong with one of the barrels, it isn't contagious, quote-unquote, and affect the other barrels that are there. Ketzeb Bodek, how does he check? Gizvay Yoshev B'kaneh B'yodo, Zaraka Giri Kish B'kaneh. Once the gear starts to come out, he hit or smacked down with his staff. We discussed in the Mishnah that there is a requirement that the wine that is brought for the libations be absolutely clear and unadulterated wine. So therefore we precluded using that which is at the base of the barrel because that has sediment and dregs in it, as well as not using that which is on the layer, the top layer, the surface of the wine, where somehow through the fermentation process either is some sort of froth that is there or white residue that's there from the fermentation process. We also don't want that to be in the wine libation. Now, the bottom is easier to avoid than the top. The bottom, you just put the tap or you only take the wine from above that level in the barrel. But the things that are on top are much harder to watch for them. And the Mishnah described to us that they either put a tap or they used to take from the middle section of the wine and by there avoid taking from the top. But then, as you're draining it out of the tap, there's a possibility that some of the white residue would come out through the tap. What's being described here is that the overseer, the gizbar, when he's watching the tap pouring out, that he would hit with his stick as soon as he saw some whiteness coming through the tap, which would be a sign to the person that was providing the wine or pouring the wine out, that he should stop the tap at that point in time. And Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot makes an alternate suggestion, which is bang on the barrel itself in order to disperse that white froth or residue, and that would prevent it from coming out of the barrel. But most likely, based on what the Gemara is going to say here, it was a siman, it was a sign to stop the process at that point in time. But the Gemara wants to know, why don't you just tell him what you need him to do? Tana, zaraka gir shoshmarim. Once the whiteness, gir is obviously limestone rock, but they're not talking about lime coming out of there. They're speaking about something that has the same
color or properties like lime. Gizbar hekish bikaneh. The gizbar bangs with the staff in order to tell him to stop. Velemile meimar. Why didn't he just say to him, stop? Why does he have to bang with the staff in order to do this? Isaile the Rabbi Yochanan. That helps Rabbi Yochanan's position. Dam Rabbi Yochanan. Kishem she dibur yafel b'samim, kach dibura liyayin. Similar and in the opposite form, just like speech and speaking is good for b'samim, for the making of spices, for making of the ketoret. And that's what we say with regards to the ketoret, that he says, hadek hetev, hedev hadek, so that there is this lashon that they used to say while they were making the ketoret. And the reason behind that is because a dibur is yafed b'samim, that the speaking, having some sort of sing-song while the ketoret is being made is beneficial to the b'samim. So that way is true by the b'samim, just the opposite is true by yayin, and that dibur ra the yayin, speech or sing-song or any verbal expression while you're pouring the wine is detrimental to the wine. It can cause it to ferment. And therefore, they didn't want to speak. They used the staff as the signal rather than using instruction in order to stop the wine at that point in time. Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda comes at the end of the Mishnah and says that anything that has both kemachim, has this white residue in it, is pasul. So now, it seems that he is differentiated from the Tanakhama in the fact that the Tanakhama says if the wine has the kemachim in it, you can draw from the wine, just avoid the kemachim. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda seems to indicate that even if it has kemachim in it, it is problematic. Even if you draw from the areas that doesn't have the kemachim, that's not good enough. The wine itself having kemachim in it is problematic. So now the Gemara says, by Rabbi Yochanan, hikdisho mahu shilakeh alav. Now in more likelihood, it should not be Rabbi Yochanan over here. The way the Shita Mekubetzet has over here is Rova, although we've seen this question asked on every one of the Mishnayot in this parak. And each time it was Bayi Rabba. So it's likely that it's Bayi Rabba. Hikdisho Maushi Lekelav. If he's Makdish, according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, this wine which is disqualified according to him, do you get Malkot from it? Mishum Balmum. For being Makdish Balmum. Again, we've discussed, and we'll see this later on in Kodoshim, that Rabbi has a position that if you are Makdish Balmum, which is inappropriate and cannot be put on Mizbeach, you get Malkot for a violating a lav of being makdish, something inappropriate for the mizbeach. So that is true by a balmum. Question is, when you bring something else that's disqualified, does it have that same status? Came into pasul ke balmum dummy. Since this is also disqualified, it's no different than a balmum and you should get malkot. Odelma ain balmum ele beima. Or maybe the terminology balmum is reserved for blemishes in animals. Doesn't mean pasul, it really means some physical problem with the animal. And that's only true by animals. And therefore you only get malkot by animals. Even though here, when you're makdish something that's pasul, it is similar in nature, it's not a balmum in the end, and therefore you would not get malkot. Teiku, that's an unresolved issue, as we had by all the other situations that we met in this perek. Tan Rabbanan, here we have a braita that adds on additional items. Our perek only dealt with the ingredients or the raw materials that go into a mincha, which is the solet and the shemen, and then it dealt with the wine libations, the yayin. So it told us where to source each of those items, where is the alpha, the best or most appropriate place to source it from, and then it told us where the second tier is, but it did not give us that information with regards to the animals. So Tan Rabbanan, Elim, rams, the best place to get them from is Mimoav. Kvasim, sheep, the best place to get them from is Mi-Chevron. Agalim, calves, the best place to get that from is the Mi-Sharon, is from the coastal plain. Gozlot, they get birds for the Korbanot, the best place to get them from is Mi-Har HaMelech, which is somewhere along the Hare Yehuda. It is either a reference to the entire section of the Hare Yehuda, or maybe a particular section of Hare Yehuda. They used to bring kvasim, whose height was like their width, although there are a number of girsaot over here, whether it's gavan richavim, which is what Rashi in the Ketav Yad brings in the Lishna Achrina, that their backs were extremely broad, meaning that they were very big sheep. And then Tosafot has an additional girsa of Shigovhan Rachavim. They were extremely tall animals. And Ushan's explaining that it means that their width is like their height, because he brings other midrashim that indicate that their height was extreme, and then it would be implausible that the width could be that of the height. But Rashi and the Ketav Yad in the first Lashon and the Miuchas the Rashi say that it literally means that their width was like their height, that they were extremely wide animals, because sheep in general carry a decent amount of width to them. But if they were
as wide as they are tall. They make them almost like roundish in nature. They were so fat and so big that they were extra wide. When they used to bring them, the bracha was so great that they were so well fed and so fat that these were extremely large sheep that were being brought. Amar Rava bar Rav Shila, my taima de Rav Yehuda. Where does Rav Yehuda know this from? Dichtiv, because the pasuk in Yeshayahu speaks about when the times are going to be good. Yiremik necha bayomahu kar nirchav. On that day, your flocks will graze out in the large pastures. But obviously, he's darshaning over here kar nirchav as being not the description of the pastures of the fields, but rather the animals themselves. And there, as Rashi in the Ketav Yad says, kar is a keves, is a reference to a sheep, and then it would be nirchav, would be wide, these extra wide or super wide sheep, and that's the reference in the pasuk. So now the Braita brought us those additional items. The reason that we don't have them in our Mishnayot is, as we noted before, is either because our Perek is speaking about that which is relevant to Menachot and to the wine libations, is not speaking about animals. Or there could be a difference in opinion here between the author of the Braita and the Mishnayot in our Perek, which is that when you speak about something that it grows from the ground, something that is a Yitziat Karka, then you can speak about specific locations being the best locations to bring it from, because then it's very dependent on the land itself. On the other hand, when you speak about animals, that has to do with the breeding and maybe to do with the grazing in that area, but there's nothing inherent about the place that should bring up these better animals. There should be the ability to bring up these animals. I have good animals anywhere. Just depends on the breed or the species of animals that you have. And so, therefore, our Mishnayot don't deal with it, whereas the author of the Braita feels that there is something to the location when it comes to the uniqueness of the animals that come from that particular location. Tiv, the pasuk says in Yeshayahu, Al chomotayich Yerushalayim ifkadeti shomrim kol hayom v'chol halayla. So it says that I've set watchmen on the walls of Yerushalayim. Tamid lo yecheshu. They should never be silenced. Hamazkirim et Hashem. Those that mention Hashem's name, al dami lechem. Take no rest or be not silent. And now the Gemara wants to know, mayamre. Meaning that it says that they should never be silenced. Don't be quieted. What were they saying that we're saying to them, don't be quiet. Continue to say what you were going to say. So now you know why it's brought over here, because this is another memra from Rava Bar Rav Shila, where he's explaining a pasuk, or he's explaining some sort of memra. So here they're brought together because of that connection. In addition, it's interesting to note that the Miuchas Rashi says that the Shomrim that we're speaking about here are not human watchmen, but rather Malachim, angels that are guarding Yerushalayim. And what is it that they are saying? So, Achi Amar Rav Bashila, Ata Takum Terachem Tzion, Kiet Lechenena Kiva Moed. What we're asking them not to be quiet about is the fact that they are beseeching Hashem to have Rachamim on Tzion, on Yerushalayim, because the time has come for the redemption. So that's what we're saying to them, they should not be silenced. Nachman Yitzchak Amar, Bonei Yerushalayim Hashem, Nidchei Yisrael Yichanes. That Hashem builds up Yerushalayim, He gathers together all the dispersed of Klal Yisrael. Or in a sense, he should rebuild Yerushalayim. Umikara ma'ave amri. That's great. That's post the Churban. That's what the watchmen say when they are guarding the walls of Yerushalayim. But before the Churban, what was it that they said? And that what was it they should not be silent about? Amarava bar Rav Shila, ki bechar Hashem b'tzion, iva the moshav lo. That Hashem has chosen Tzion. He desired that as his residence, as his dwelling place. Originally, before the Churban, it was a kilus, a praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Hashem has chosen this place to have His Shekhinah reside. And then once the Churban came, we want the return of that Shekhinah. We want the return of the rebuilding of Yerushalayim. And that's what the Malachim are saying, who are the guards of Yerushalayim. And that's what's hinted to in the Pasuk, that they should never be silenced. Okay, with that we complete the ninth parak. Hadron Alach, Kol Korbanot HaTzibur. Now move on to the next parak about the Midot, which is Shtei Midot Shoyavesh Ayub Mikdash. There were two dry measures in the Mikdash, Isaron v'chatzi Isaron, a whole Isaron and a half Isaron. Not that there were only two utensils, but there were these two measures, multiple utensils that had these measures, but the only two dry measures in the Mikdash are Isaron and chatzi Isaron. Rabbi Meir Omer, Isaron, Isaron v'chatzi Isaron. There are actually three different measures in the Mikdash.
There's an Isaron and an Isaron. We'll get to in the Gemara in a second why they had to have two different Esronot. Vechatzi Isaron and then a half Isaron. Isaron mahaya mishamesh. What was the utility of the Isaron in the Mikdash? All the menachot come as an Isaron solet, and so therefore the Isaron was the measurement that was used for that. Chatzi Isaron maya mishamesh. What was the purpose, the utility of the Chatzi Isaron in the Mikdash? That's how they measured the chavitin for the Kohen Gadol. Mechsa baboker umechsa ben arbaim. Because it was brought from a Isaron solet, but it was brought half in the morning, half in the afternoon. So they had to break it down. After they brought an Isaron solet, they had to break it in half. Half to be done brought in the morning, half in the afternoon. And they used the Chatzi Isaron in order to measure that out. So now we have a braita that gives us more information about the Mishnah, which is Tanya, Haya Rabbi Meir Omer, Ma Talmud Lomar, Isaron, Isaron, Lakeves Hayachad. The pasuk by the Korbanot of Shavuot, it says, Umin Chatam Solet B'lulav Bashamen, Shlosha Isaronim Lapar Echad, Shnei Isaronim La'el Echad, Isaron, Isaron, Lakeves Hayachad, the Shivat HaKvasim. So there's a duplication of the word Isaron there by the Keves Hayachad. Melameid Sheshtei Isronot Hayu B'Mikdash. That teaches you that there were two different Isronot in the Mikdash. The difference between them being Echad Gadush v'Echad Machuk. One of them was a piled up, a heaped measurement, v'Echad Machuk, and one of them was a wiped flat measurement. So there are two ways to provide, and the Gemara deals with this in numerous locations, and these were the standard types of measures that were used in commercial transactions in their day. It was either to sell things based on a filled item to the top, but then flattened out at the top. So the item held whatever measure it was, and then you took a stick, which was called a machok, and you used to wipe it across the top, and that would then level it out, and that would be the exact measurement. The other way to do it is to heap it on, which is to fill up the measurement, heap it up on top, beyond the perimeter of the lip of whatever utensil it is. You would heap it up in the middle until it was totally full, and then you would get to the measure. The truth is that the Isaron is equal to in both these cases. The Isaron of the Machuk is totally internal to the Kli, and that's an entire Isaron inside of the Kli when you wipe off the top. The Gadush is an Isaron after you fill the Kli and then heap it up on the outside. So you have these two Kelims. Gadush, they use the Gadush, because they use that to measure for the Menachot. The reason being is because it is more presentable, it has a certain amount of appeal to the eye. When you see something that is heaped up, it looks like it's of a generous portion. And therefore, when we're working in the Mikdash and we're trying to bring the best before Hashem, they use the Gadush measure, even though, again, the Machuk would give you the exact same amount. Nevertheless, they use the Gadush because it presented better. So that was used for all the Menachot that had to come from an Isaron. Machuk, on the other hand, Sheboya Mudeid Lechavitei Kohen Gadol. The machuk was used for the chavitim of the Kohen Gadol, as both Rashi in the Ketav Yad and the Balei Tosafot explain over here, because the Kohen Gadol had to bring from his house an Isaron. And then in bringing the Isaron from his house, he had to then split it into two, and shelo yishpoch hasolet aretz kishochotzeil, in order to prevent there being any loss when he pours it out from the Isaron into the Chatzi Isaron, or also in transporting it to the Mikdash from his home. So in order for that to be not spilling and falling all over the place, they use machuk. So it's a practical issue. Gadush has a better appearance, but in certain situations like here, by the Chavite Kohen Gadol, for practical purposes, it was much better to use a machuk. And that's why they use the machuk by the Chavitim and the Gadush by the Menachot. But that is precipitated by the fact that there is a pasuk that says, Isaron, Isaron. Now, Rashi in the Ketav Yad says, there are Meir Svile, Gemara, the shtei midot shel esronot ayu b'tzibur, that he has some sort of misora that there should be shtei esronot in the tzibur. And obviously, if they were the exact same size, meaning that they did the exact same thing, then there'd only be one and not two. So how do you divide it up into two? That is the machuk and the gadush. The Balei Tosafot are somewhat perplexed by Rashi's statement, because we just brought the proof for Rabbi Meir from a pasuk. He says, tema gadol, the Rabbi Meir darish lemikra, of Isaron, Isaron. B'kuntras perish, the Rabbi Meir Sirile Gemara, the Shtei Esronot B'tzibur, that they had a Mesora about it. It's somewhat difficult to understand why you would need a Mesora if the Pasuk says Isaron, Isaron, which is coming out of the Pasuk. The answer might be, the Pasuk itself is not necessarily a giveaway. You'd have to have a Mesora that that was the source for this idea, because you could just read it as a literary style rather than being meaningful. And number two is, once you know the information of Shtei Esronot, you need to know what the makeup or what the nature of these two Esronot are, and that might be what is mentioned over here by Rashi as being the Gemara Gemirila that they had the Mesorah from, rather than what was learned from the Pasuk. Alright, now the Chachamim Omrim, Lo Yisham El Yisaron Echad. They say there was only one Yisaron in the Mikdash, because the subsequent parak, when it's speaking about the Korbanot of Rosh Hashanah, it says over there, V'Yisaron Echad, L'Kev Esa Echad, L'Shivat HaKvasim. Yisaron Echad there implies that there's only one Yisaron rather than two Esronot. So you have a pasuk that says Yisaron Yisaron, and a pasuk that says Yisaron Echad. In came Atamalom or Yisaron Yisaron. So for the Chachamim, what do you need Yisaron Yisaron? There are both Chatzi Yisaron. That's how they know there was a second measure, which was a reboy to tell you that there was not only an Yisaron, but also a Chatzi Yisaron. Rabbi Meir, Chatzi Yisaron Menole, Nafkale Me Vit Yisaron. He learns it out from the extra Vav that is there. Rabbanan Vav Lo Darshe. And the Chachamim, on the other hand, don't darshen it from the reboy of the Vav. So the V'Yisaron Echad to them is not a reboy to tell you have an extra one. It's the Yisaron Yisaron that teaches you that. And then Rabbi Meir learns it out from the Vav of V'Yisaron Echad. So that Vav teaches you not only was there Yisaron, but there was also a Chatzi Yisaron. Rabbi Meir, hi, V'Yisaron Echad, the Keves Echad, my Abidle. What does he do with that? How Shaloyim Dod Lo B'Shel Shlosha LaPar V'Lo Shel Shnaim La'ayel? That's to teach you that the par that has three Yisaron that come with it, and the aisle that has two Yisaron, you don't measure it with a unit of three or a unit of two. You actually measure it one by one. You have to take an Yisaron and measure an Yisaron three times to get the three you need for the par. And for the aisle, you have to measure an Yisaron twice to get to the Shnaim, rather than have a utensil that is that size. Rabbonon, Nafgalahu Minikudo. They learn it out from the fact that there is a dot on top of the Vav of Yisaron. And that dot comes to be Lima'et. It's always something that is detracting when you have a dot over there, because it removes that letter. So that miyut of taking the Vav out comes to teach you that you have to use the Yisaron only to bring all the Korbanot, and not to have something that's the size of two Yisaron or three Yisaron in the Mikdash. Titania Amar Rabbi Yossi, Lamana Kud Vav, Shebeemtza Yisaron, Shel Yisaron Rishon, Shel Yom Tov Rishon, Shel Chag. When it comes to the Korbanot of Sukkot, first day of Yom Tov on Sukkot, it says over there, Umin Chatam, Solid Bulava Shemen, Shlosha Esronim Lapar Echad, Lishlosha Saparim, Shnei Esronim Lail Echad, Lishnei Ailim, V'Yisaron, Yisaron, Lakeves Echad, Arba Asar Kvasim. There it says, V'Yisaron, Yisaron. So the first Yisaron, Shel Yom Tov Rishon, Shel Chag on the first day of Sukkot, Shelo Imdod, Lo B'Shel Gimel Lapar, V'Lo Shel Shnaim La'ayu. So that's the source for this, is that Yisaron, Yisaron that is mentioned in Pasuk Tet Vav, in Perachav Tet, which is the first day of Yom Tov of Sukkot. The first Yisaron in V'Yisaron, Yisaron, there's a dot above the Vav there. That dot comes to teach you a miut, that the Yisaron is the only measurement, and there's nothing above the Yisaron, and you're going to measure out the par and the ayo with that Yisaron. For Rabbi Meir, Nikudol Odarish, he doesn't think that the dot there is significant enough to be Doresh, the fact that there's a miut in this situation. Chatzi Yisaron, Maya Mishamesh, So the Chatzi Yisaron, the Mishnah describes, is being used to measure out the Chavitin of the Kohen Gadol. Modeid. Is that true, that you measure out the Chavitin of the Kohen Gadol? Rabbi Yemini, Chavitin Kohen Gadol, lo bayin chatzin. They don't come in halves. El mevi Yisaron shalem v'chotzeyu. You bring a full Yisaron, and then you split it in half. So Amar Rav Sheshet, my Modeid nami diktani michalek. Modeid doesn't mean to measure out. You were thinking to measure out a Chatzi Yisaron for the Chavite Kohen Gadol, which seemed to imply that you start with the Chatzi Yisaron. That's not what the meaning of the word Modeid means over here. Modeid over here means Michalek, that you bring it as a whole Yisaron, and then you split it in half. So when it says Modeid Chavite Kohen Gadol, doesn't mean you start out measuring it at that level, but rather you measure out from what you've brought, you now divide it up into these two halves, and that's what it means Modeid in this situation. Baimene Rami Barchama Mirab Chista. Chatzi Yisaron Rabbi Meir, Kadushaya O Machukaya. So this is the question that you had on the Mishnah. If we have Rabbi Meir telling us that there are two Esronot in the Mishnah, if he only has one Chatzi Yisaron, is it a Chatzi Yisaron of the Gadush, or is it a Chatzi Yisaron of the Machuk? Why don't you ask the same question on the Rabbanan? The Rabbanan, Isaron Gufe, Kamibai, Gadushaya, O Machukaya, was there Isaron, the Gadush one or the Machuk one? By the Rabbanan, I can't ask about the Chatz Isaron, I have to ask about the Isaron itself. The Rabbanan will only have one Isaron. Which of the two Esronot of Rabbi Meir do they have? Do they have the regular Isaron Gadush, or do they have Isaron Machuk? So I'm not asking about the Chatz Isaron of the Rabbanan, because I don't even know what their Isaron is. So Amalei, of Chizda response, Rabbi Bar Chaman says, Mid Rabbi Meir Nishma Rabbi Meir. From Rabbi Meir, we'll learn to the other aspect of Rabbi Meir. Mid Rabbi Meir Nishma Rabbanan. And from Rabbi Meir, we'll learn to the Rabbanan. Mid Gama Rabbi Meir Isaron Machuk. Chatz Isaron Nami Machuk. The fact that Rabbi Meir believes that the Isaron is Machuk, so too the Chatz Isaron is also Machuk. And now that Rabbi Meir says that the Isaron is Machuk, the Rabbanan, Nami Machuk. For the Rabbanan also, it will be Machuk. So the idea being that the purpose of Isaron Machuk was the ability for the Kohen Gadol to bring the Chavitin to the Mikdash without having to spill it, or when they are pouring it into the Chatzi Isaron, that it shouldn't spill over. So if the whole purpose of the Isaron Machuk is for the Chavite Kohen Gadol, and we know that the Chatz Isaron is serving for the Chavitin to be able to split it in half, so it should mimic the structure of the Kli that you're bringing the Chavitin in of the Isaron. So just like the Isaron is Machuk, so too the Chatz Isaron, which is used in the Chavitin, should also be Machuk. Now once you've declared that for Rabbi Meir, for the Chachamim, it should be the same thing, because the Chachamim have to have one of the two. If they have the Gadush, then that works well for all the other Menachot, but it doesn't work well for the Chavitin. On the other hand, if you have the Machuk, then it works for the Chavitin, and it's no worse for the Minachot. You'll still get an Isaron. Might be not as nice a presentation, because it won't be heaping high, but nevertheless, it still will function as an Isaron. So therefore, for Rabbi Meir, that is the standard Kli that is considered by Rabbi Meir to be the basic Kli, then so too for the Rabbanan, that'll be the basic Kli. Or in essence, the Isaron that Rabbi Meir brings came to include a second Isaron, which was the primary, and which was the additional one. From here in the Gemara, it would seem that the primary one was the Machuk, and then the additional one was the Gadush, which was a presentation issue. It was a way to enhance the presentation of the Mincha when you bring it. So that was the additional one. The Chachamim only have one, don't have that added one that is Gadush. They have the original, which is Machuk. Baiminei, Rami Bar Chama Rav Chisda. So again, this is a genre of questions that have the same questioner asking of the same individual. So here again, Rami Bar Chama asks Rav Chisda. Chavite Kohen Gadol, Bame Michalkan, Lechalot. How does he break them down into chalot? Bayad or Bekli? Does he do that manually? Or does he have some sort of utensil in order to figure out how to split them into pieces? Now, here you have numerous explanations as to what it means that he's splitting up the chalot to the Chavite Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol's Chavitin were brought Machatzita Boboker, Machatzita Ba'erev, half in the morning, half of it in the afternoon. It was split up, as we saw before, from the Isaron was split in half, Chatz Isaron for the morning, Chatz Isaron for the evening. It came from 12 chalot, 6 of which were brought in the morning, and 6 of which were brought in the afternoon. What Rashi says over here is, B'ma mechalka, shim mechalka isa lechalot. Once you've made the dough from that Chatz Isaron, how do you break it up into 6 units to make the 6 chalot? So Rashi says it's a cutting or a breaking of the isa. How do you go about breaking up into 6 units? Do you do it by hand? Or do you have to use some sort of utensil to make sure that there's an exact amount in each one of them? The 6 are identical. The Baal Tosafot quote Rashi's explanation over here when they were in Isa, and he says, V'yev shalom arkach. So it's impossible to say that, because he says, the revit nimshecha shebo ayamudei dechavitei going do, revit shemen lechokhala bechala. Because we're going to see in the next Mishnah, a revit alog in the Mikdash, and that revi'it talog was used to dish out the right amount of shemen oil for each one of the chalot. V'kodem lisha tzarich livlo. And before you ever do any kneading, you have to mix it up. So that means that if you have to have the oil in the utensil before you bring the solid to it, and then you bring the solid to it, that means that you've already divided it up into 6 before it ever came dough. And so the Baal Tosafot say that that can't be, that the division here is after it's already dough, but it has to be at an earlier stage. When it's still in its flower stage, how do you divide it up into 6 units in order to make the chalot that are associated with the Chavite Kohen Gadol? So the question is, should he yishaer biyado? He should do an estimation by hand,
Or does he divide them up with a utensil, which will give you a much more exact division? Rav Chista says back to him, Pshita de biyad. It's clear that you have to do this by hand. Dibikli, tortani yachnis. If he has to do it by kli, what are you going to do? Bring in a scale, where he has to measure them on the scale to make sure they're all of the exact same weight and the exact same size? So Gemara says, Dibiyachnis. Why not bring in a scale to do it? Kevon dibiklolaktiv lavorachara. Since it's particularly associated with a curse, we don't want to bring it into the Mikdash. The Pasuk says in the Tochacha in Bechukotai, Veshivu lach mechem b'mishkal, that when you make your bread, you put it in, it's going to come back in a measured form. So over there it uses the word mishkal, or a scale, to indicate something that is lacking brocha. Something that's brocha is something that expands and comes back more plentiful than what you put in. Something that comes back with mishkal comes back in its exact measured manner, and that's something that's a klala. So we don't want to bring in something that's associated with klala into the mikdash. I think here in particular, it's associated with the item that we're making. We're making chalot over here, we're making breads, and the scale is viewed negatively in the context of making breads, and therefore it would be inappropriate to bring the scale into the mikdash, which is a symbol of klala, into the makom of bracha. Vayimine, Rami Barchame Rav Chista, again, the same parties over here. Rami Barchame asked Rav Chista, Shulchan, Mao shi kadesh kmatzim begodesh shelo. Can the shulchan be mikadesh its kmatzim in its height or in its heaping side? So here you have numerous explanations. The first of which is the kmatzim, according to Rashi, is the levona, the frankincense that is placed on the shulchan, usually inside of bazichim. If you place it on the shulchan, not on bazichim, but directly on the shulchan, is the shulchan mikadesh it. The godesh over here also. There are two explanations to what the godesh is, which is either the table itself, meaning that the table has no height or has no rim around it, so godesh means the top of the shulchan. So is the top of the shulchan, when you place the levona on it, is it mikadesh levona if they're not put into a kli sharet, which were the bazichim? Or the other way to learn the godesh is that the godesh is the height of the lechamim, the lechem apanim that sit on it. So that means that if you put the frankincense either in between the lechamim or on the lechamim themselves, that's the godesh, that's the height of it, and then is that mikadesh it. So that's the way that Rashi Nektav Yad learns it. Tosafot disagrees and says that the word kometz is inappropriate over here. It should have said that it's speaking about the levona explicitly. The fact that it mentions a kometz means that it's speaking about a mincha. And the question here is, if you took a kmitza off of a mincha, which normally you'd have to put into a kli sharet, instead you put it on the shulchan, does that serve in place of a kli sharet to be mikadeshit? The Miuchas Rashi brings both of them. Brings both the possibility that it's the levona on the shulchan, or it's a kmitza shel mincha. Either one of those is the shulchan a mechanism for in being mikadesh those items. That was the question that Rami Barchama posed to Rav Chista. May the mikadesh lechem, since it's able to, or has the capacity to be mikadesh to lechem upanim, kmatzim nami mikadesh, it also has the possibility of being mikadesh to levona, or the kometz of the mincha. Odilma the chazile mikadesh, that which belongs on it, it is mikadesh. Lechem upanim are supposed to be on the shulchan. The lo chazile, lo mikadesh. On the other hand, the levona and the kometz of the mincha, which don't belong on the shulchan directly, they belong in the kli sharet for the kometz and in bazichim for the levona. Maybe there the shulchan will not be mikadesh. Amalei, enu mikadesh. It's not mikadesh anything besides the lechem. Ini, is that really true? V'hamar Rabbi Yochanan, the Divya Omer, t'fachayim u'mechza kufel. According to the one who says, again, we'll get to this later in the Masechta, that the height of the lechem apanim was determined by how long the shulchan was, and what were the size of the lechamim. So depending on the size of the lechamim, then you had to fold the lechem up in order to fit it onto the shulchan. The one who says that you're kufel, t'fachayim u'mechza, means that you had to fold it up on each side 2.5 tefach in order to fit it onto the shulchan, so they had height of 2.5 tefachim. Nimsa shulchan mikadesh 15 tefach lamala. That means that the shulchan is able to be mikadesh up to 15 tefachim high, because you have 2.5 tefachim for each of the lechem apanim, and the lechem apanim were stacked 6 on top of each other, so 6 times 2.5 is 15. So the height of the lechem apanim was 15 tefachim high. Given that it was 15 tefachim high, that's the level until which the shulchan is mikadesh. The Divya Omer Tfachaim Kofel, according to one who says that the shulchan was a little bigger, and you only had to fold up 2 tefachim on the sides of the lechem panim to have them upright. Nimsa shulchan mikadesh yud bet tefach lamala. Then 6 times 2 is 12. So the shulchan is successful at being mikadesh
up to 12 tvachim high. From Rabbi Yochanan, it makes it sound like the Shulchan has the capacity to be Mikadesh. And guided by how high the Lechamim go, that tells you up to what point the Shulchan can be successful being Mikadesh. So Rav Chis, you're telling us that it's Enu Mikadesh. From Yochanan, it sounds like it is Mikadesh. My answer is Amalei, Enu Mikadesh li Karev, or Mikadesh li Pasel. We say, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that's successful at being Mikadesh, or according to Rav Chis, that it's Enu Mikadesh, they're speaking about two different issues. Enu Mikadesh li Karev. It's unsuccessful in Mikadesh the item to make it then ra'ui to go on the Mizbeach. Whether it's the Levona, or whether it's the Komets of the Mincha, even though it's Mikadesh them, it's not Mikadesh them to the point where they now can be put on the Mizbeach. On the other hand, it is successful in Mikadesh them for the aspect of Lipasel, that now they will be Pasul if they become Tamei, if they are left overnight, problems of Lina, Biyotze, and all the normal Psulim that are associated with something that is Nitkadesh. That's one explanation. The Miyuchas Rashi brings a second explanation, which is they become disqualified, meaning that before we saw about the Mincha, if you put the Gomets of Mincha on there, that's going to disqualify the Mincha. If you put the entire Mincha on there, it's going to disqualify it. Lipasel means that it won't be successful in Mikadesha to the point where you can then continue on with the process as if it was placed in a Kli Sharet, but it's not as if nothing happened. It was Mikadesha to the point now that it's irreversible, and now you can't use this Mincha as a mincha anymore, because it's already kadosh, lipasel, but it was not sufficiently kadosh to be likarev, to be put on the mizbeach. Right now, the next Mishnah deals with sheva midot shalach hayu b'migdash. There were seven liquid measures in the migdash. There were multiple kelim that contained these different measures, but there were only seven different size measurements in the migdash. Hin, which is 12 log, that was the largest. V'chatziayin, which is 6 log, which is used for the nisachim of the par. Shlishitayin, which is 4 log, which is used for the nisachim of the ayo. Riviitayin, which is 3 log, which is used for the nisachim of the keves. Log, the log itself, which is for the log shaman. Chatzi log, a half log. And reviita log, and a quarter log. Those are the 7 items. Rabbi Eliezer Bar Tzadok Omer, Shnatot Ayu Behin. That it was actually one single kli with etches inside of it. The hin, which is the largest, it has 12 log in it. It had marks in it that said, Ad kan lepar. They marked it at the halfway point and said, if you fill it to here, it's good for the par. Ad kan aisle. They filled it to the 1/3 point. That was where it was for the aisle. Fill it up to the 1/4 point. That was for the keves. I mean, it was a single measuring cup that had multiple lines in it indicating until where you need to fill to fulfill whatever your need is in terms of the login. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo yasham hin. There was no reason to have a liquid measure of a hin in the Mikdash. B'chima hin haya mishamesh. There was no usage for a hin. A hin is 12 log. There's nothing in the Mikdash that requires 12 log. It's one thing to speak about a chatzia hin, because that's used for the par, or a shlishita hin, which is used for the aisle, or a vita hin for the keves, but a full hin wasn't used for anything. Ela midayitera shalog umechza haita sham. So that he drops hin from the 7, but he still believes there are 7. So he adds in an additional liquid measure of 1.5 log. Shabayam modei the minchat kohen gadol log amechsa babokor log amechsa ben arbaim. So we learned earlier in the Masechta, the kavite kohen gadol come with 3 log of shemen. Those 3 log of shemen, they need to be divided in half. Half of the morning, half of the afternoon. And you do that through this utensil of log vachetzi. 1.5 log, which will allow you to split the 3 into a half. Terabanan, sheva midot shalach hayu b'migdash. There were 7 liquid measures in the migdash. Rivita log, v'chatzi log, a quarter log, a half log, v'log, and a full log. V'rivita in, quarter of a in, which is 3 log. Shlishita in, a third of a in, which is 4 log. V'chatzi in, which is 6 log. V'hin, and a hin, which is 12 log. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's the view of Rabbi Yehuda as to what the 7 were. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir has the exact same 7. But he just counts them in a different order. He starts from the biggest to the smallest, which is what our Mishnah does, versus Rabbi Yehuda, who starts from the smallest to the largest. So Rabbi Meir Omer, hin, b'chatziah hin, 12 log, 6 log, shlishita hin, which is 4 log, revita hin, 3 log, vilog, v'chatzi log, urevita log, a half log and a quarter log. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo yasham hin. There was no hin over there. V'chimayah hin mishamesh. Like he said in our Mishnah in the Bright Eiri notes, there's no purpose for a hin in the Mikdash. Et mi avi tachtav. I need to replace it now to maintain the number of 7. Ela midayitera shel logomechsa ita sham. There was this additional logomechsa there. Shabo yamodei dechavitei kohen gadol. That they use for the kohen gadol, logomechsa baboker, logomechsa ben arabayim. To take the 3 log that he brings and split it in half for 1.5 in the morning, 1.5 for the
afternoon. Amro lo, chatzi log, aita sham. You already have a chatzi log, so why do you need a log umechza? Ve'afshar l'sha'er b'chatzi log. And you can measure it out with a chatzi log. If you need 1.5 log, you can take a half log 3 times, or you can take a log and a half log, and together they'll give you a log umechza. So why do you need a separate utensil of log umechza? According to you, why do you even need a half log and a full log? You have a quarter of a log. So you need a chatzi log, take 2 riviot a log. You need a full log, take 4 riviot a log. So then why do you need the log measure and the chatzi log measure? A kli only has one utility in the Mikdash. It can only be used for the particular item that it's designated for and does not have multiple uses. So if you were to suggest that we don't need a log and a chatzi log and you can use the revi'it log to measure it all out, that means now that the revi'it log is being used for multiple items in the Mikdash because you're using it to build out to a log when you need a log, using it to come to a chatzi log when you need a chatzi log. So that means that it has multiple purposes in the Mikdash, which is unacceptable. Each kli has its unique purpose, and therefore it doesn't matter that you have duplication in the sense that you could recreate or simulate the shiurim by adding up smaller shiurim, but that would then force you to use something multiple times. In order for that not to be true, we have a separate chatzi log, separate log, versus the quarter log. And similarly for me, I have a log umechza, even though I could have done it through a half log, nevertheless, I have a unique utensil that deals with it because each utensil has to be used for its unique purpose and not double in service for something else or to build towards something else. And Tosfot over here notes that the Chachamim would respond to Rabbi Shimon's claim by saying that it's one thing when you're talking about a chatzi log that's used for multiple different things in the Mikdash. Over there, it doesn't make sense to have a revi'it log making up the chatzi log, simulating the chatzi log by having 2 revi'it log. On the other hand, the log umechza is used only for one thing in the Mikdash, which is the chavite kohen gadol. So if we're going to use a full log and a chatzi log, or just use a chatzi log to simulate that, makes sense because it's not something that's so unique and has to be used in multiple different areas. It's one extra item that you have to do. It doesn't make sense to make a kli just for that purpose. As Miuchas Rashi points out, it's obvious that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Tzadok doesn't hold of this principle because he has in the Mishnah a single kli that is servicing all different sizes. Okay, we're going to stop here by the 2 dots on the top of Pechet and Amud Aleph.